Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about green salads, potato salads, and salad dressings, and much, much more on community radio. Hi, this is the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctegal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We're here to celebrate summer. Donna's got all good, kind of good things to say about salads.
Lana's going to give you a few caveats as well.
Caveats? No, that's fish eggs. No, not caveats. No.
That was completely impromptu, I want you to know.
Our whole lives are impromptu. Impromptu. No, there's all kinds of good things growing in the garden now. I hope you've got all kinds of lettuce and sorrel and
spinach.
Yeah, and mustards and picking things to put on your plate. You can eat all this stuff raw.
And Lana, how? Let's see. The salad greens will be good until it gets really hot, right?
Until it gets really hot. And so far, we've had a dandy summer here in central Iowa. So at the farmers market, you should be able to find all kinds of good green stuff. Before they bolt and turn bitter. So eat yourself silly on salads. And to go on those salads, we usually don't just chew on them right out of the garden, although that's very, very possible.
I had an uncle once.
Yes.
My aunt was the gardener, so she grew leaf lettuce. Now, this is in the days of iceberg, so it was spectacularly unusual. And Uncle Doc used to eat his salad greens, salad leaves, with sugar sprinkled on them. That was it, period.
Well, My dad always liked sugar, too, but he put sugar with a little cream. Sugar cream, shake it up, salt and pepper.
On a
garden green leaf lettuce.
That was his salad dressing.
It was a little bit of
sugar, cream, salt and pepper.
Yeah. Oh, I think he put a little vinegar in it, too, but I do remember the cream and the sugar. My dad put sugar on everything, so maybe, but he was good. But that, I remember that is a very good taste from summer. Mm-hmm. That's one way to dress your salad. Why do we call it dressing a salad? Naked salad? Dressing
salad? So Lana has a Consumer Reports on salad dressing.
Yes. It seems that good old Consumer Reports, who evidently is always looking out for our best interest, did a whole series of tests on salad dressings, but they just tested the bottle kind, and there is tons and tons
tested.
Of
tested. What's that, like a taste test?
Taste test. Ah, they taste okay. Tested everything and the prices and all that sort of thing. They came up with some that people preferred, and they have a whole list, and that's fine. But one has to remember.
These are all your name brand salad dressings.
Name brand salad dressings.
It's a big section in the supermarket. So
Yes. We're
going to tell you, forget all that.
Actually, what comes out of this whole article on bottle salad dressing is all this stuff is great, and here's what's in it and everything else. But at the end of everything else, Consumer Reports gives recipes for making it your own, because they say it's ever so much better for you, it's cheaper, make your own.
I was going to say, it's probably significantly less expensive.
Yes, tis. And also, they have a little bit of information here that I'd like to share. It's in a little part of the article that they entitle, What's in This Stuff? Besides the ingredients that you recognize in the bottled dressings.
Like vinegar, oil, salt, sugar.
Yeah. That sort of stuff. We recognize that. There's other things. Bottled dressings contain a lot more than oil, vinegar, and spices. Here are some common ingredients and what they do. Xanthan gum. It acts as a stabilizer, suspending agent,
thickener,
emulsifier. Keep it from
it's
separating.
It's not too terrible.
Yeah, there. It goos things up. Gum. Reb A, is that R-E-B-A or Reb A? It comes from the stevia plant, and that's a sweetener.
That's also not too terrible.
Yeah, it's called, the FDA considers that a safe sugar substitute. Another thing you find in salad dressings on the shelf are modified cornstarch. Another thickener.
GMO cornstarch.
Uh-huh. Calcium sodium EDTA.
Definitely a chemical.
Oh, a preservative used to prevent spoilage and maintain even coloring. This stuff can last on the shelf for a long time. And here's another ingredient that you may find on your label. Potassium sorbate, another shelf life extender used in many foods. It prevents the growth of yeasts, mold, and some bacteria.
Yeah, so that stuff can sit on the shelf for several years or something like that. So we're going to talk about how to make your own. The simplest thing is vinegar and oil. And I often just, fix the salad up, whatever I want in it, and then I sprinkle a little salt on, grind a little pepper on, and then I just pour on the vinegar and the oil. Now, the trick is you want significantly more oil than vinegar, usually about twice the oil as the vinegar. Of course, how vinegared you want your salad is personal. I don't like mine terribly, terribly vinegared because I don't want to completely wilt everything and cover up all those fresh, delicate, leafy flavors. But so I at my house, first of all, I always only use cold-pressed organic olive oil because it's the one that has flavor. Usually the light olive oils are highly refined and they're not terrible for you, but they don't do that much for you either. I never use any, and this is what will be in the bottled salad dressings on the shelf. They call it vegetable oil. So it could be cottonseed oil. It could be canola, could be sunflower, safflower. But it's also things that I consider practically non-edible. But I always use olive oil. It's simple. It's straightforward. And that's mostly what I cook with. Now, for vinegars, there's all kinds of vinegars. There's the flavored ones, which you can make yourself. Or there's red wine vinegar, white wine vinegar, champagne vinegar, balsamic vinegar, rice wine vinegar, which is one of my favorites because it's so light and so neutral.
There's also
sherry vinegar.
Oh, yes. And you can make your own vinegar by infusing things in regular vinegar.
Right. Like take a white wine vinegar, drop in a few sprigs of tarragon, then you have your own tarragon vinegar in about 2 weeks.
That's good. I sometimes mix elderberry juice with vinegar. It gives that a nice little pink.
Pink
is good.
Yeah.
There's also on the market, there are other flavored vinegars. There's a store in Des Moines called Allspice, and you can taste vinegars and oils there. All different kinds of flavors. You can taste things before you buy. One of my favorites from that store, and I haven't figured out how to make it myself, so why not just buy it from these nice people? It is a grapefruit vinegar. And, that's kind of a nice taste. What a nice idea. That's good. So there are traditional salad dressings. They have names like ranch.
We forgot to mention, Italian, you can make your own vinegars, too.
Oh, yes. Have at it.
Like that bottle of red wine that you didn't finish, you can just keep pouring them all together and let them sit on the shelf. And from the natural whatever's in the air, it will eventually make its little mother, which is a slimy little thing in the bottom.
An important slimy little thing.
Yeah, and within 6 months, you've got a homemade vinegar.
Yeah, that works. Also, I tried last year taking some crab apples, mushing them up, putting them in a small crock, covering it with a towel so flies didn't get in, and that eventually turned into a vinegar.
Oh, I bet it did.
Yeah. It's pretty pungent, so I use it just in small quantities. But things will go to vinegar. I think that's kind of a good statement of life. Things will go to vinegar pretty easily. So,
yeah. Well, you also probably don't want to use in your salads distilled white vinegar. It's a little too acidic. And also most apple cider vinegars, although sometimes I do use Bragg's raw apple cider vinegar.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that has the raw mother, the good little slimy bit in it.
Yes.
It's supposed to be very good for you. So there's lots of good taste just to come from the vinegar. But then you can mix things up and create vinegars that we actually have names for. There's Italian.
Oh, the vinaigrette. Yeah, basically Italian vinaigrette is, you know, like if you're going to buy it in the shelf, it's really a vinegar and oil mixture and then some herbs added. So that would be like probably oregano, a little basil. Let's see, what else? You could put chopped fresh parsley, chopped fresh basil, chopped fresh oregano. You can add lemon juice. You can add garlic. Of course, olive oil and white wine vinegar. And, of course, you can season it either with fresh or dried herbs. That's just basically Italian is really vinegar and oil with herbs. Another classic one that people buy in the bottle is Caesar dressing. It's one of my favorites. But to make a Caesar salad, of course, you classically use romaine leaves. And you can make your own croutons very easily. This dressing used mayonnaise. This recipe from Consumer Reports. Basically, it's usually you rub the inside of the bowl with garlic. So you have just a little bit of garlic flavor. And then it's usually olive oil, Parmesan cheese, a raw egg yolk, a little bit of mustard, and some smushed anchovies. And let's see. Oh, yeah. And lemon juice and Worcestershire sauce. That's a classic Caesar. It's really easy to make and so delicious.
And here's just a quick fact here. Caesar dressing isn't named after Julius Caesar or Caesar's Palace, for that matter. It's named in honor of the Mexican chef Caesar Cardini, who created it in 1924 in Tijuana. So
God bless Caesar. He did us all a good favor there.
Yeah. And then there's... Oh, what other kind of dressing did you want to talk about?
Well, they do mention here also a classic ranch dressing because people really like this. So I guess you do this in a blender probably. Clove of mince, garlic, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce. Worcestershire, I always like that word. 2 tablespoons of white wine vinegar, 2/3 cup of mayonnaise, 2/3 cup of sour cream, 2/3 cup of whole milk, and 1 tablespoon each of chopped fresh parsley, dill, and chives. Well, that sounds like a little calorie-laden bomb there, but I'm sure it's better if you home-make it than if you buy it in the bottle.
At least you can avoid all the things that make you last for years and years on the shelf.
Yeah, and there would be no cottonseed oil in it.
Yes. Well, you might want to be cottony. I don't know. But here's another thing to think about. A lot of things that we see in the grocery store have the word natural.
Particularly salad dressings.
Yeah, natural. That's a good word, natural. You see that word natural on food and you assume it means there's nothing artificial. You assume there's nothing artificial in it, right? Well, you might not be right there. You're wrong. As strange as it sounds, natural doesn't necessarily mean the food is free of additives. The Food and Drug Administration doesn't formally define this term, so manufacturers can use that term at will.
Unregulated.
To mention anything. So although natural may make you feel good, it doesn't really reflect what is in the packaging. So
it's a sales gimmick. Sorry, folks.
So watch out for these words on labels. Made with natural ingredients. Naturally flavored, naturally brewed. All of these are meaningless terms that can make food products sound healthy even if it's not. Another tip-off is that a product probably isn't entirely wholesome. A long ingredient list, especially ones with lots of multisyllabic and unrecognizable words. So watch out for those. If you can't pronounce it, assume it's probably not natural.
Read the labels. Always read the labels. They have to tell you what's in it, more or less.
Yes. So. Even if they use the word natural.
But buyer beware.
Buyer beware. Oh, another dressing that I like this time of year, especially with spinach, but it works just fine with other fresh salad greens, too. I love to make a hot bacon dressing.
Oh, yum. Oh, yum.
Hot bacon dressing. To make hot bacon dressing, and it's served warm on the salad, so things can kind of have a really good smell.
Right, so you don't need the olive oil for that one.
No.
Tell them how you do it, Lana.
The oil comes from the bacon.
Bacon!
Fry up. I start I usually use 2 strips of bacon to serve two.
Oh, you're so modest. I probably would use more.
You could probably use a lot more. What you want is the bacon dripping. So render that bacon down. Take the bacon out and drain it because you'll use that to crumble up on top of the salad later. You've got a pan of hot bacon drippings. To that pan, you can add a little bit of sugar, balsamic vinegar, and salt and pepper. That's about all I add. And
so the vinegar basically deglazes the pan so that you get all the nice flavor and crunchy bits. And then you toss it. I like to make it hot and pour it right onto the spinach. So you kind of have a wilted spinach salad.
And then sprinkle the bacon bits on top. And I like to add a hard-boiled egg to that because that just all tastes really good. So that's my hot bacon thing to happen this time of year.
I have a vegetarian version, too, which is not just for vegetarians. I like to make, instead of bacon, I put the olive oil in the pan and I do a large dice of a sweet onion, either a Vidalia onion, which is in season now, or a red onion. And I do it kind of, the pieces are like, it's called a large dice, which is maybe a half inch by a half inch. But, you know, big enough that you don't lose them. So I fry them up in the olive oil till they're not, as I would say, dead. The heat has gone out of the onion and they're not totally wilted. They still have a little form. Then I deglaze with the vinegar of my choice. And then I pour that right on the salad also. And you can actually probably do onions and bacon salad dressing.
What a taste treat. That sounds lovely.
Yeah, and in tomato season, you could add the tomatoes in. Then you'd have a BLT in a bowl.
Ooh, doesn't that just sound like summer? We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. We've been talking about summer salads and good stuff to put on them. We're going to move right on to potato salad.
Now, it's not really quite potato season yet, but this is so summery that we have to talk about it. The first thing is we want to talk about there are two kinds of classic potato salads. One is made with mayonnaise and or mayonnaise and sour cream. And then the other one is German style, at least as I was raised, which is basically a vinaigrette, vinegar and oil salad dressing. So I tend to actually make the vinegar and oil, although I love both kinds, because it's probably slightly less caloric. It means it won't make me quite so fat. So the one thing, the classic potato salad ingredients that Lana and I were talking about is usually some kind of onion, whether it's a scallion or a sweet onion, some kind of potato cooked, and probably celery. What did your mom put in hers?
Oh, she put in celery salt.
Well, we can put in celery or lovage, as we've been talking about, lovage, which we both have in our gardens. Which is a wonderful celery-like leaf flavor.
Sometimes hard-boiled eggs.
And I was just thinking your bacon dressing would be excellent on. Now, one thing I have to say about potato salads that I kind of try to watch for is to make sure it's colorful enough. So I either put in something red or orange, like a carrot or a pepper, something green, maybe fresh herbs, either onions or parsley or, you know, so it's not just
Beige.
Monochromatic.
Beige.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those beige foods. And that on a plate with you know, fried chicken in the summer and a piece of toast. It's all beige, beige, beige. So, yes, I agree. Put in something pretty.
Right. There's lots of opportunities for packing all kinds of vegetables into. In fact, a popular potato salad that I make is actually sweet potato salad. You make it just like you would any regular potato. You can either have half sweet potatoes for the color or with white potatoes, or you can go all sweet potato flavored. You can roast them, but the only thing with sweet potatoes is not to let them get too soft. They kind of have to stay in their cube form a little bit. Another thing is root vegetables. Cooked root vegetables are quite good in potato salad, like rutabaga, parsnips, beets, although it'll turn the whole salad pink, but if you want pink, that's great. Or you can use golden beets, which are really good in salads. If you're really brave and adventurous, you can put turnips, either cooked or raw. Although there's been some baby turnips in the markets lately that are just delightful. They're, you know, they don't have the underneath yuck factor. They're just kind of spicy. Radishes are good in potato salad for color and for a little hit of spice.
Oh, radishes are a lovely summer vegetable.
Yeah,
early summer vegetable.
Tons of radishes right now. Those Easter egg ones that come in so many different colors.
And the long French breakfast.
Yeah,
kind.
Those nice are little lovely. Red and white.
A little aside here from potato salads. My favorite thing to do with radishes in the summer is to cut them up and have them on a almond butter sandwich. Almond butter radishes. In a sandwich. What? That's a nice summer treat for me.
Oh, my. That's a Lana original, folks.
Well, yeah.
It actually sounds good. I love almond butter. I love radishes. Why not?
Have at it. It's pretty good.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's pretty good. Oh, another thing about potato salads is that you can probably have something in your refrigerator that you can use to add to the dressing. I made a couple years ago, my cousin Dave gave me a recipe for jalapeno green tomato relish. And I made that in the fall because it was the green tomato season and pepper season. And it, as a relish, it's pretty boring, and I made it way too watery. So I've got these jars of this pickly stuff, and that added to potatoes for a potato salad is really, really nice. So thanks to cousin Dave for his jalapeno green tomato relish that ended up being really good, really good dressing.
Pickles are a classic to cut the mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just pour pickle juice in instead of vinegar. And of course, then you add fresh dill to the salad. It's delicious.
Very good.
Another thing, like even if you're doing the sweet potato salad, you can put in a little roasted salsa or tomatillo salsa. You can certainly add corn.
Ah.
Cucumbers, if they're diced properly. You know, just get creative. I've even seen people put frozen peas in if you're really desperate for color. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Thawed frozen peas, as it were.
Oh, hard little thing. I have a potato question. Sometimes my potatoes don't get cooked for the salad, or I take them off too soon, and sometimes my potatoes get mushy. Is there a trick to keeping the potatoes al dente so they're not so mushy for the potato salad?
Well, that would depend on the kind of potato you're using. And I really think there's no bad potatoes for making potato salad. It also depends. Some people like their potato salad
that's
mushy.
That's true.
Especially if they're using a mayonnaise dressing, and some people don't. So, you know, you can either roast them. Or steam them. If you're roasting them, you're going to have to cube them up. I like potato skins, although that's not everyone's favorite, but I feel like they have the vitamin in them and a little roughage. We always need the roughage. So you can dice them and kind of toss them in olive oil and roast them. And then I just keep poking them with a fork tine and take them out, you know, when they're the consistency I want. It's a little harder to control if you're steaming them.
Mm-hmm.
But the same thing, you know, you just cook it till it's done the way you want by keep poking it.
Oh, okay. And then, oh, yes, and it also helps to, after they're done, to run them under cold water.
You can do that. Or
Or just let them air dry?
Well, no, if you're boiling them, you want to stop the cooking process. You want to strain them off. Then you can spread them out on a cookie sheet or on the counter so that they cool faster. And the same thing would be with roasting. You want to pull them out of the oven when they're done the way you want and throw them either onto a cooled cookie sheet or just spread them out on the counter so that they don't continue to cook.
That's right. I kind of like the German style of potato salad that everything is sort of separate yet.
Yes, discrete bits.
The other mushy kind is absolutely wonderful, but it's a whole other experience. I kind of like my chunks.
Probably depends on how one's mother made it.
I wouldn't you know it. And you can serve German potato salad hot or cold.
Yes.
That's good. And usually German potato salad is a good venue for ham or bacon bits or things like that, too.
Mm.
So there.
Mm-hmm.
There we have it.
Mm.
There we have it. See, you were going to talk about, last week we instituted a wonderful sort of promise that Donna was going to present us with a cool summer treat, a cool summer dessert recipe, and she's got a dandy for us today.
Well, it's really, I mean, it's not, it is a recipe, of course, but it's really a holder for ice cream or chilled puddings, and that is cream puffs. When I was a little girl, my mother, she was a professional woman and had her own business, so she did not do a lot of cooking. But this is one thing she did cook a lot, that it's something children love to cook. It's kind of like a little miracle. She also used to take us to the library, and down on one of the lower shelves were all the Raggedy Ann and Andy series, which she read to us diligently. And in Raggedy Ann and Andy, there is a character called Betsy Bonnet String. Now, Betsy Bonnet String has a magic apron. And what was magic about her apron? She would shake the apron and out would come cream puffs. That was just, you know, irresistible. So the cream puff recipe that I have used forever is actually from The Joy of Cooking. And I'm just going to read it because she writes so delightfully and so straightforwardly. And it's a very funny recipe because it looks really odd. Now, cream puffs are also called in French pâte à choux, which is kind of like the pastry of the cabbage, because when you form them, they look like little cabbages. They're also called profiteroles if you serve them with vanilla ice cream with chocolate sauce on the side. So I like that. That's a nice word, too. Profiteroles.
Profiteroles, yeah. Yes.
So cream puffs. Here it is from The Joy of Cooking. This makes 2 dozen 3-inch shells. So you preheat the oven to 400 degrees. And then you must have the eggs at room temperature. And then you sift before measuring 1 cup all-purpose flour, 1/8 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of sugar. That's if you're going to make a sweet dessert. You can also make cream puffs and fill them with savory things, or you can grate cheese into the dough like Parmesan and just make little cheese puffs for hors d'oeuvres or things. Okay, so place in a heavy pan 1 cup of water or milk. I usually just use water, and 1/3 cup of butter. So you bring the butter and water to a boil. Then I love how she says this. Then you add the flour mixture in one fell swoop. And it's really like that. You dump it in and stir quickly with a wooden spoon. It looks really, she says it looks really rough at first, and it does. It kind of looks really gunky. But suddenly it becomes smooth, at which point you stir faster. In a few minutes, the paste becomes dry and does not cling to the spoon or the sides of the pan. And when the spoon is pressed on it lightly, it leaves a smooth imprint. This is how you'll know what you're doing, right? It says, do not overcook or overstir at this point, for then the dough will fail to puff. Now, I have done this, so pay attention, guys. Then you remove the pan from the heat for about 2 minutes, and it must never be returned to the heat. This is why, to cook properly, the eggs must be at room temperature.
Oh, I was wondering when you're going to get to the eggs. Now the eggs.
Oh, so this is the fun part that children love. You've kind of got this glop. You take it off, and one at a time, you add the eggs beating vigorously after each addition. So you stir the egg in and kind of beat it, and then it becomes this kind of shiny, slippery stuff. And then you add the next egg. It says, continue to beat each time until the dough no longer looks slippery. The paste is ready to bake when the last egg has been incorporated. The proper consistency has been reached when a small quantity of the dough will stand erect if scooped up on the end of the spoon. It is best to use the dough at once. A spoon or a pastry bag will serve to form different shapes. Be sure to press the filled bag until you're rid of all the air in the tube. Now, another thing you can do is take a baggie, a plastic Ziploc baggie, put it in and cut off a corner, and that gives you a squeeze tube. Let's see. So you have to allow space through the expansion around the shapes because they'll grow as you cook them. You squeeze them onto a greased pan. To form the puff of the characteristic cabbagey shoe shape, hold the tube close to the baking sheet. Do not move the tube. Simply let the paste bubble up until it gets the desired size. And then if you want to make eclairs, you kind of draw the tube along about 3 to 4 inches while pressing.
Cream puffs are a small dot. Eclairs are a long line.
Yes. And always finish with a lifting and reverse motion on the eclairs.
Like the top of a Dairy Queen swirl, I think.
Exactly. To form small pastry cups, make 1-inch globules. This would be like if you were making cheese puffs or something. The little point left when you lift the bag can be pressed down with a moistened finger. Okay, before baking, this is critical. Sprinkle a few drops of water over the shapes on the pan, lightly, as you would sprinkle laundry. I wonder if anybody sprinkles laundry anymore.
How old is your joy of cooking anyway?
This one is so old it doesn't even have a cover, but I don't get rid of it for a new one because I have notes all over it.
Okay.
So bake cream puffs, shells, and eclairs in a preheated oven at 400 degrees for 10 minutes. Reduce the heat to 350 and bake about 25 minutes longer. Do not remove from the oven until they are quite firm to the touch. Cool the shells away from any draft before filling. For filling, cut them horizontally with a sharp knife and then just either put the ice cream in it or I've done it even with flavored yogurts. Pudding is, of course, always my favorite. Vanilla, chocolate, butterscotch. We're talking childhood memories here. So that is straight out of The Joy of Cooking, folks. And it's I'm sure you can look it up online if you don't have a copy yourself. I have to say, I visited the Smithsonian, which has the whole Julia Child kitchen intact. And, of course, it has her collection of cookbooks.
Oh.
They're all her cookbooks, of course. And The Joy of Cooking. You just can't live without a copy of The Joy of Cooking.
I think it's wonderful. And thinking of cream puffs as a cool summer treat, what a nice thing.
Yeah, with ice cream in them. You could also put strawberry syrup on top, you know, just mash the strawberries up with a little sugar and let them juice out and pour that over.
Oh, yes. We're coming up to strawberry season.
Yeah, we're going to have berry season.
Strawberry shortcake and strawberry cream puffs sound
really
good.
Don't steal my thunder. That might be a recipe next week.
Well, all right, we'll do that.
You never know.
Let's get just things for people to get hungry about. That's good. Let's see. We're going to talk a little bit about some things that are going to be coming up. For instance, an announcement from the Mustard Seed Community Farm. On Saturday, June 14th and Sunday, June 15th, the Mustard Seed Community Farm will have a natural building workshop. The workshop will teach techniques to sustainability by building using straw, clay, sand, and reclaimed materials. For more information to register for the class, call Alice at 515-460-1467. Mustard Seed has a nice start on an outdoor kitchen.
Yeah, they have a cob kitchen progress, and it's quite something.
And it's we'll talk about a nice place to process food and to spend your time
it's an
in the summer.
Kitchen.
Outdoor kitchen. But protected from the elements a bit, and that's...
Oh, yeah, it has a roof over it.
That's pretty nice.
So it's like a canning kitchen or a summer kitchen people used
what
to
what a
have.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Also, I want to mention that there are many farmers markets up and running around central Iowa right now. I'll just read a few of them here so you know that you can get your greens to put underneath your salad dressing. In Ames,
It has a Wednesday market and a Saturday market. Wednesdays 3 to 6 on Wednesdays and 8 to 1 on Saturdays at North Grand Mall. And then downtown 8 a.m. to 12:30 on Main Street, the Main Street Cultural District. There's two farmers markets in Ames. Ankeny has one in Uptown Ankeny, 8 to noon on Saturdays. Des Moines, of course, the big one, 7 to noon Saturdays.
That is an impressive.
Yes, in the Course Historical District. Yeah, that's an event. Go to that at least once a summer. Mm-hmm. Johnston has one, Johnston, Iowa, 3 to 7 on Tuesdays in the Johnston City Hall parking lot. Marshalltown has one on Thursdays, 4:30 to 7 p.m. in the Courthouse Square. Newton has one on Tuesdays, 4 to 6:30 at the Center for the Arts and Artists. Boone, Iowa, and the corner of 6th and Story Street in Boone, Iowa, Thursdays, 3 to 6. Huxley on Railroad Street, 4 to 7 on the third Thursday of the month. And there's also one in West Des Moines, 4 to 8 on Thursday evenings, and that's in Valley Junction. I got this information off the Internet, so it must be true. But, however, if I got the time and date of your farmer's market wrong, please call and let us know.
Call the radio station.
Call the radio station. And also let us know what you think of this show. Give us your 2 cents worth. Tell us what's on your plate. The phone number here is 515-292-2878. That's some farmers markets in the area. Also, another little bit of news here. KHOI will be hosting the Grassroots Radio Conference. That's in August 14th through 17th, later this summer.
That's kind of exciting, actually. That's our new local radio station is going to draw other sort of radio heads from all over the country. So we're going to give them the old Iowa welcome.
And learn lots about community radio and how to better serve listeners and share a wealth of information, too. These volunteers are from all over the country, and they could have a major impact, and we can, too, on towns large and small across North America. And there's many ways that you can help, including hosting some of these people. They could use a place to stay.
Yes, all public radio stations, everybody's on a shoestring. So we want to put them up, and we've arranged to feed them. We need people to pick up the travelers from the Des Moines airport. We need to provide transportation for field trips. You could lend a bicycle for the attendees to use to get around town. You could serve on a planning and organizing committee. You could sponsor the conference with a donation. You could attend the conference. Or you can bring a tish to the Thursday night welcoming potluck. Now, we'll be mentioning that again. But if you want to do any of those things, call the radio station again. The number is
515-292-2878. And also check out the KHOI website, khoifm.org. Okay. One more thing. We're going to be in the 4th of July parade.
Oh, yes.
So.
Hallelujah, honey.
So, look for us and wave and cheer for KHOI at the 4th of July parade.
Yes, and it's going to be historically themed, of course.
Yes. Ha, wonderful. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're on KHOI Radio. Let's see. What else do we want to
you
talk about?
You have a rhubarb
today?
Poem, don't you?
Oh, a rhubarb poem. Rhubarb just is not going to die this year. That's good. There's all kinds of things to do with rhubarb. You did a wonderful rhubarb thing last week.
Well, tell us about, didn't you tell you made a rhubarb jam this week, too?
Oh, yes. See, like I said, rhubarb just is not going to die. I hate to waste anything. So,
well, it goes on for at least another month or so.
At least. It's starting to go to seed a little bit, so you have to be on top of that. I have a recipe for a rhubarb orange jam. And I'm not going to give you the complete recipe here, but this is what it tastes like. It tastes like candied oranges, rhubarb, and summertime.
Like marmalade.
Like marmalade. It's very, very chunky. It's very lovely. And I get inspired for this recipe and many others from a wonderful book on jams and jellies. It's called Mes Confitures. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
Mes Confitures. The Jams and Jellies of Christine Ferber. And she's French, and they have a wonderful collection of things, including many, many ways to use rhubarb. But I happen to make one with this candied oranges in it, and it's really good.
So it's basically you make like an orange marmalade with the skin and the whole bit, and cook that down with the sugar.
You cook down thin slices of oranges to make that marmalade.
Organic oranges, of
course. That helps because you're eating the skins. You don't want to eat any nasty bits there. And then add chunked up rhubarb.
Once the oranges have cooked, then you put the rhubarb in?
Yes.
Then you cook it all down? I have tasted Lana's rhubarb orange jam from seasons past. It is fabulous.
It's a good year for it, folks. Get out there and attack your rhubarb patch. It's good. Also, put any of the extras in the freezer. It'll do for all winter. I have a poem here from Midwestern poet Ted Kooser. He just shows up all the time, and I can read his poems and just get a good smile. This is a poem called How to Make Rhubarb Wine. This isn't exactly a recipe. This is just what it feels like to make rhubarb wine. How to Make Rhubarb Wine by Ted Kooser. Go to the patch some afternoon in early summer, fuzzy with insects and sunlight, and pick a sack of rhubarb. Red or green will do, and God knows, watch for rattlesnakes. Or better, listen. They make a sound like an old lawnmower rolling downhill. Wear a hat. A straw hat is best for the heat, but that lets the gnats in. Bunch up the stalks, chop off the leaves with a buck knife, and be careful. You need 10 pounds. A grocery bag packed full will do it. Then go home. Sit barefoot in the shade behind the house with a can of beer. Spread out the rhubarb in the grass and wash it with cold water from the garden hose, washing your feet as well. Then take a nap. That evening, dice the rhubarb up and put it in a crock. Then pour in 8 quarts of boiling water. Cover it with a checkered cloth to keep the fruit flies out and let it stand 5 days or so. Take time each day to think of it. Ferment for 10 days under the cloth, sniffing of it from time to time, then siphon it off, swallowing some, and bottle it. Sit back and watch the clear liquid turn to honey yellow. Bottle it. It's ready for the years to come. And smile. You've done it awfully well.
It's like a recipe and it's in a poem, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if that'd work exactly, but the sentiment is there. The sentiment is there. That's good.
So I've been, out walking through the forest with the dogs and just admiring the spring and enjoying myself so much. And everywhere I look, there's something I want to eat. So yesterday I saw red clover, honeysuckle, wild chamomile, and I just happened to have been reading about a honeysuckle cordial recipe. So it's basically you make a honeysuckle syrup, and I am going to try this. Although you have to have 4 cups of honeysuckle blossoms.
Oh, good luck.
But don't you have a lot of honeysuckle in your woods, Lana?
Honeysuckle is an invasive species. We're trying to get rid of it in the woods.
Well, good. I'll be there picking the flowers.
However, you can find them around farmsteads because people plant them as an ornamental and usually
so beautiful.
Hedges take off
so
like crazy.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a small one in my yard, but certainly not enough to get 4 cups. So you take 4 cups of honeysuckle blossoms, 3 cups of water and 3 cups of sugar and 1/2 lemon zested and sliced thin. So according to this recipe, you bring the water and sugar to a boil. And then you pour the syrup over the flowers. And then you stir in the lemon zest and the thin slices of lemon. Then you let it steep covered until it reaches room temperature. And then you put it in the fridge and you still steep it overnight or about 24 hours. And then you strain through a cheesecloth. Now here, are the uses for this honeysuckle cordial? She says honeysuckle soda, so you mix it with sparkling water, honeysuckle cocktails. She says, I hear it's good mixed with champagne, honeysuckle sorbet, honeysuckle vinaigrette, honeysuckle biscuits, honeysuckle marshmallows. Doesn't that sound, I've got to make some of this. Honeysuckle tea, honeysuckle buttercream frosting, and honeysuckle butter. You mix it with a little butter. And honeysuckle cream brulee, honeysuckle French toast.
Oh, there you have
So honeysuckle, honeysuckle. And then the red clovers are just popping out everywhere. So some good things to do with red clover. First of all, you can make a tea and just, you know, steep them for like 5 minutes and drink them.
The red tops.
Yes.
Just the tops.
Well, but the leaves as well,
oh,
actually.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, they're loaded with phytoestrogens, which means they're contraindicated for people who are dealing with estrogen-sensitive things like breast cancer and stuff like that.
Oh,
but for the rest of us, they're quite healthy. They're supposed to be good for mitigating hot flashes, for example. So they're also delicious. You can pop them as a garnish on your potato salad, for example. You can put them in floating around in iced tea. They're good in green salads when you want a little more color. They're just pretty. Just they're kind of like, you know, picking the purple chive flowers as well. The other thing is I was I had been over in the – what's the park over by the river where we used to have a swimming pool?
River Valley Park?
Yes. I was walking the dogs through there yesterday, and they've mowed all the paths recently, which is glorious. And thank you to whoever does that. It's such a pleasant place to be. But I was standing down one end. There's a big gate, and I was leaning on the gate waiting for the dogs to noodle themselves around. And I'm smelling this thing that was not just the cut grass smell. And I look down at my feet, and it's full of chamomile everywhere. And it's such a – I can remember as a child laying in the grass out on the family farm, just kind of rolling in that chamomile that smell, you know, it's so, that's not the stinky chamomile. That's the really sweet wild chamomile. And so, of course, I was having this fantasy that I could get rid of all the creeping Charlie in my yard and just seed it in with chamomile. Of course, it's never going to happen, but it was really, really a pleasure.
The chamomile has these teeny tiny little daisy-like flowers, and it grows pretty low with little fine.
Well,
fine
and the wild one does not even get petals. It just has the little yellow pointy things.
Oh, how nice. How nice. That's good. Got a little bit here.
Yeah, the white-petaled one is a German chamomile, which is more cultivated. And it's used as a calming tea.
Yeah.
And people who have heavy allergies to ragwood apparently should not drink chamomile tea, although no one's sure if that's true or not.
Ah, yes, it says right here, general tonic and sedative, good for restless children and nightmares.
It's always in the it's always in the sleepy time mix. That old Celestial Seasons one is basically chamomile tea.
Oh yes, chamomile has inspired a proverb. Here's a proverb. Like a chamomile bed, the more it is trodden, the more it will spread. It's a nice thing to have underfoot.
As opposed to Creeping Charlie.
As opposed to Creeping Charlie. You were talking about trying to chase out Creeping Charlie with chamomile. I don't think it'd work.
No. I'm sure I would have to, like, rototill the whole yard to get rid of the Creeping Charlie, so it's not going to happen.
But start your chamomile in a sunny, sunny place, and it will kind of spread. But it's like going to be like the Battle of the Titans there to see the, as it meets up with the Creeping Charlie.
Well, it is perennial, so maybe over time I could encourage it.
Good. There's also – you were talking about honeysuckle flowers. There's also – Elderflowers. I always thought they must be very wise.
Yeah, we will have that soon, that we get those beautiful umbrals, and that's all over the woods. I have some in my backyard, too. So you get a choice. You either pick the flowers, and you can make an elderflower kind of the same way you would make the jasmine. You know, it's just an infusion.
You mean the honeysuckle.
Honeysuckle, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, jasmine as well. But, yeah, it's, you know, those flowers are really delicate, so you kind of steep them in the already heated water-sugar mixture, kind of thing like that. But if you pick all the umbrals, you won't have any elderberries.
Ah.
So we have moderation here. And if in case you guys want to know what it tastes like, there is a really very popular these days elderflower. I don't know if it's a wine or it's a cordial. Oh boy, now I'm not going to think of the name of it.
But it is a taste that is out there. Elderflower.
Yeah, they sell it actually at the Cyclone Liquor Store. The elderflower liqueur, Saint Germain. It's called Saint Germain. It's wonderful in cocktails. They maybe have it other places around town, but it hit the culinary cocktail scene about 3 years ago, and now it's in everything. But it really, really, even just a little of that in some champagne, it's very summery. Or I've put it in some light sorbets. It's that elderflower flavor. It's quite good.
Oh, that's lovely. Good. I always like when the elderberries come. Elderberries come when it's amazingly hot and mosquito-y, and picking them luckily is rather easy. You can fill a pail with elderberries rather quickly, and it's always in the hottest week of the summer. But it's worth it.
And you have to get there before the birds.
Get there before the birds. Yes, last year was not a good elderberry year. I don't know why the birds got. Well, it was very dry. There was not much to eat, and the birds just plain got anything. So let's hope that all these good rains means there's enough for everybody.
For us and the birds.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll see soon because the flowers will come first.
And keep in mind your potato salads and your green salads and stuff coming up for the summer. It makes me think of picnics. So today you've heard about cream puffs as our cool, enjoyable
dessert of the week.
Summer dessert of the week. And do check out the KHOI website and find out more about us. We've got a little section there. Go to talk shows, scroll down, find Donna Lana Kitchen. We're there. We'll have interesting
things. And that's
where
we post our recipes when we put a recipe up.
That's good. I think that's about enough to chew on for the week, don't you think?
Yeah.
That sounds good. Well, I'll let you know that this has been the Donna Lana Kitchen with Lana Nachtigal
and Donna Prisgintas,
with excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. We're going to go out with a tune called Picking Berries by the band Notorious. So this has been the Donna Lana Kitchen. Eat good food and enjoy life.